Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Morelia Python Radio, brought to you in part by Morelia Python Forums, the best carpet Morelia Python forum on the net. Go over and check it out, www.moreliapythonforum.com. Tonight it's just me and Owen. What's up, Owen?
Why? Have you heard things?
Well, you know, we got everybody all excited about the special guest, and it's Owen. He's the special guest.
Fooled you all.
That we've all been waiting for. It's him.
And we've just lost everyone who was listening. We apologize.
Yeah. It didn't work out with the – that guest will definitely be on. It would be at some point, but
was a scheduling error or something? We're not going to elaborate. So just there.
Yeah, it was just a conflict of scheduling. So yeah, it's kind of hard to get this
person
to come on because of
golf.
I guess time zone issues and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Right. But we'll figure it out. We promise. We got people from Australia. We can figure this one out.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Speaking of which,
yeah.
Before we go and jump in, next week we have Damon from Reptile Connects, and
right.
I thought I was pretty pretty insane about mapping out my projects. Well, he sends me over his outline for his projects for the next. I guess in Australia it's this upcoming. I guess they're in the season now.
Oh,
it's pretty intense. I'm gonna forward it over to you so you can check it out. But he's got Morelia to the right and all his Antaresia to the left. So it's but he's got pictures and diagrams and it's pretty intense.
That much?
It's pretty cool. Oh yeah. Yeah, it's pretty neat. He's got some pretty cool Antaresia morphs and different projects that he's working on, and I'm looking forward to talking to him about some of the different stuff that he's got going on. So I know over on Facebook he goes by Reptile Connects.
Yes.
So.
Okay. Now I know who we're talking about.
Yep.
Cool.
So.
All right.
Yeah, Damien, he's over there. So we're gonna have Australia on next week. So that should be cool.
They love us in Australia. Sorry.
Yeah. So we're just gonna BS tonight and some topics. I kind of like these shows because I don't really have to do any work. Because putting the show together is a lot of work.
I just have to call and talk to Owen, and then usually we'll get on a tangent, and then it's just like rage. It's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever.
There's a couple things I wanted to hit on. It gives me some time to hit on some of the different things out there on the web, on Facebook, that people are doing to try to promote the community. I wanted to talk about some of the pages. I got a pretty cool book in the mail on I remember when we were talking to Ari Flagel about his Black Python book.
Yes.
I got a copy of it. It's actually a really cool book. Okay. I would definitely recommend picking it up. I'm flipping through it, and then maybe the first, I guess it's the first, it goes to the genius Morelia, and it pretty much lists all the snakes that I want to have in my collection page by page.
So you Xerox it, and now you have it posted all around the room, and like a string going to each page, and your wife has no idea what the hell's going on, but
yeah,
it's fine, it's good, yeah. She'll understand eventually.
But one of the exactly. One of the cool things that he did is he got the pictures of when they are when they're born and when they're adults, so you can see the changes. In,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah. So it goes through all the carpet pythons, all the scrub pythons, of course the Bolan's python, the rough scales. It's just pretty cool. Chondros, et cetera, et cetera. But if you can. I know it's pretty hard to find this, but if you can pick it up, it's definitely worth the read. There's a lot of cool pictures of the different habitats in New Guinea, and talks about just the environment over there, and just a really, really cool book. And we're trying to get I know I was talking to him last week, and he said he's coming out with the second edition of it. So
wow.
Should be pretty
That's
cool.
Awesome. That's a quick turnaround, isn't it? I mean, for having the one out and then having the second volume already?
Yeah, I don't know when this came out. I know it's probably when I first got into it, because I remember seeing it on the net that everybody was... 2009.
Hmm. Not as much as I thought, but still. Yeah. I haven't written a book, so...
Me neither.
Yeah. Owen's big pop-up book of Morelia would be great. Sell all over the place.
Speaking of Owen and Rogue Reptiles, I wanted to talk a bit about your new acquisition that you...
The new acquisitions would be the ones that you know of are 1.1 Bismarck ring pythons, which they're bred by Conk Yogan, which I have. My male white lip came from Tom Kierkegaard, my black face, and my pair of olive pythons came from Tom, and I love them all. So it's definitely one of those things. But what you don't know about is what's coming at Hamburg, and that would be an adult male Bismarck ring. So look at me go.
Look at you, holding out before the show. I see how it is.
I can't tell you everything. I have nothing to talk about. So, yeah, it's a valid point. Yeah, so,
the element of surprise from me.
I have to. It's one of those things. But I posted up on Rogue's Facebook just baby pictures of the two Bismarcks that I'm getting, the pair. And I love how your comment was the first one. And I said, are you freaking kidding me? And then you threatened to get rough scale pythons the next day. So I was like, oh, I guess we're at this point now. So I was definitely laughing about that one. But I never really kind of gave any thought to them. But my business partner, Chris, was like, he was pushing for them for a little bit. And I'm like, I don't know, they're whatever. And then he finally got me to, like, just sit down and look at them and do some research on them and poke around at them. And then I'm like, oh, my God, I want these. These are awesome. They're like, and I'm like, and why the hell still classified as boa? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, this is so confusing. Now I want them even more. So we just, and then somehow, I don't know why, like, every time he and I talk about, like, a potential project and that we're going to do it, like, the same thing happened with the granite eye chase. I got a male granite. I'm like, well, I guess I got to find a granite female. Boom, next day on fauna. I'm like, God damn it. So it's like you're talking about it, and then there's no time to think, oh, well, maybe not. There they are. It's like, shit. Well, right, money over here, get the babies, and oh, too many cages, and we're snowballing out of control. I've lost all hope. So, but I am definitely happy with the Bismarcks, and with that, we're just kind of changing gears and doing all python species. I know I had like cool. some collier birds here or there. We're just all pythons. We have a good group of carpets that I love. We have the Paramax. We have good representation in Lyasis with the Max, the Waters, and the Olives. We got these Bismarcks. We have the two pair of Antaresia. We have the Malukans. We have the breeding groups of both phases of white lip. Even though since Michael Cole mentioned this red one, the third one, I have been scouring Google trying to find this thing. I don't know if he was lying to me just to send me on this goose chase, but I swear to God I will find them. I want them so bad. So it's one of those things where I'm kind of, you know, just decided to just do. We have so many different variations of python now, it's crazy. So, like, one peg for every hole, it's great.
Now let me ask you this. With you getting into, it looks like you're kind of going the route of trying to get, you know, a pair of each type of python, or will there ever be ball pythons in there?
Get those fucking guys. What the hell? Who are you speaking to?
I'm just curious. Cause,
I am appalled, sir. I have always said, and I admit this now fully, and I expect the backlash that I'm going to get from it, from you people, you wolves.
Here it comes.
shut up. I've said that if I could find a good pair of piebald, that I would get a pair of piebalds and just keep them just to breed and make more piebald babies. And I would never, ever try to mix them with other things or do other things, because I personally kind of find piebalds interesting. I didn't say I like them. I find them interesting. So I always said I would get one of those because, whatever. But I've never brought – because every time I'm like, hey, maybe I'll look into some piebalds. Ooh, zebra carpet pythons. I mean, it's like that – luckily, stuff keeps coming in front of me to stop me. So maybe is the answer to that question.
Well, the reason I asked, I mean, I don't know if you plan on doing this as a full-time thing or something like that, but the more and more that I gear myself towards thinking of doing this full-time, I can't imagine being a python breeder and not having ball pythons.
Without having the balls, yeah.
I mean, you just have to kind of have them. So I started looking at, and again, I'm not really, I mean, I like ball pythons, and I like some of the, I like a lot of the darker. Like, I really like the Mojaves and the Lessers
yeah.
and stuff like that. So, you know, I started mm-hmm. looking some stuff up and seeing, you know, what I liked and didn't like. And I think I came across this one called an ocelot. And
okay.
It's a leopard, a lesser, and a pin. Oh, my God, that thing is wild looking. It's really cool. I mean, there are some pretty – huh?
I've sold ball pythons before at shows. Like I've been giving them, like, you know, for instance, they don't want it, and I'm like, oh, fine, I'll put it on the table. They always go, and I don't care what they are. They could be a normal, but the big thing that runs me up a damn wall is you have to sell it by the gram, like you're selling a bag of Coke. I mean, it's like this carpet python's pretty. This ball python is 2,500 grams, and then people are, like, ripping themselves apart to get to the
right.
ball python that I have no idea why. So
right.
it's one of those things.
Yeah. I mean,
sorry.
Yeah. I don't know. It wouldn't definitely be something that I've had ball pythons before. I just didn't have the same passion for them, you know. But I think
right.
if I was going to do it full time, I would have to have some type of group. Just
well,
because.
And then you're right, and it also goes back to, like, you know what I always said, like, you always want to fill your table with stuff to bring in other people. And I
yeah.
was talking about the corn sticks. The thing is, like, I've realized that as much of a breeder that I am, baby corn snakes are the most annoying creatures on this planet. They are just, they're tiny, they don't want food, and they just want to be, What, I'm
we
sorry,
still love
there's
the
like 30 of them. There's 30 of them downstairs. I've already strangled half of them. Anyway, but and where you can spend all this time and all this money on the breeders, on incubating the eggs, and doing all this stuff. If you're not a corn snake breeder, if you're not chasing the next more of a corn snake, it is so easy to establish a relationship with somebody who either breeds corn snakes. Because I know I have several friends who have corn snakes and keep them together just because they don't want to have two tanks, get eggs every year, and then just freeze them. So now, why am I going to keep the corn snakes when my friends will just give me the damn eggs? So, and then either deal with that, or I know several other people who will get the corn snakes feeding for me as babies and then give them to me. And then I can sell them for that. It's not even worth the aggravation of doing colubrids that much. But if you're going to do strictly pythons, you have to have the one thing that brings everybody is normal ball pythons. They're cheap. They eat. They sell to anybody. Any first snake person has come to a reptile show with the notion someone down there has told them ball pythons make good pets. So it's almost like you kind of have to have some normal ball pythons on the table.
Yeah.
Crap, I just
talked
myself into getting ball pythons. Son of a bitch.
Yeah. I just, you know, I don't know. If I did it full time, I definitely would probably have a few. I had a few. I had a pretty decent group, and I got rid of them to get more carpet pythons.
Of course. They were taking up Kate's space, the carpet.
Yeah,
built.
I could.
Get out of here.
So, I had to get rid of the maclots because of that, and the walmas.
That's right. Right, the mac. I loved him, by the way.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I think about it, and then I think, I don't know. Cage space is at a prime, and, you know, I'd much rather have an albino zebra staring back at me or a Bowen's python or...
I'm waiting for it. I see them on, you know, fauna or kingsnake, and I'm like, yeah, he's already seen it. I don't even need to tell him. So, I mean, but...
You know, the other thing, and you probably agree with me with this, is that it seems like every time that an animal that I'm looking for is available, I've already committed to something else. And I can't go buy it. And I get
it is
off.
So hard to balance all that crap. Because, like, right now, before the Bismarck showed up, I'm redoing my snake room. And I want to redo it now so that I can get all my breeders in there and settled and calm and not freaking out. Also, I can foresee any problems before breeding season. Because I'd much rather deal with the problem now than right when they're supposed to be going down for cooling, because then I imagine that she's going to F up my entire year. And I've already had a crazy year this year. I want next year to go smooth. I don't want it. No more. No babies hatching in September, please. So it's one of those things where I want to get it done, and then these Bismarcks show up. And you have to weigh what you're going to do and what you want, which is the better advancement. Now, we did just redo Site B. So Site B has brand new cages, Herbstat 4s, radiant heat panels, all that stuff. And where some of the – and that's why the rarer of the pythons are over there, the Malukans, the white lips, and things like that, because they're a little touchy when it comes to those things, and also they're more difficult to breed. That's why we're sending the Bismarcks over there, too. Now we're going to redo me at Site A, and that is, I'm thinking we're probably going to do that in a month or two. Now, the Bismarcks did take a chunk out, but they didn't take a huge piece out, so I was still able to keep going. But you're right. Whenever you're looking for something, it appears at the worst possible moment. Like, you could wreck your car, and that's when, you know... I'm going to wreck my car tomorrow, and then that's when rough scales are going to appear on Kingsnake, and I'm going to be pissed. So,
yeah.
it's just how it goes. They're never going to appear right when you need them to. So, it's good to talk to the breeders and get, you know, because then when you're ready, you can just call them and be like, hey, you got any? And, you know, sometimes they'll just say yes. So.
Well, there's I think Rough Scales. I think I would probably pick up Rough Scales next. But I know the breeders that I know won't have them until next year.
Okay, good. So I got a year. All right, I got
the next season. So
yeah, it's one
that
of those things.
Cool.
But they kept popping up under Bushmaster, and then they just stopped. And I don't know if I can believe that the Bushmaster sold out of all their pairs at that price. But I could be so wrong.
You know how that goes. I mean, it's a new python that nobody has and everybody wants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's those people, but yeah.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. It's one of those things. But I don't know. Have you given thought to the new sanctions coming in Pennsylvania?
No. Educate me.
Okay. Well, the new one, and this is going to freak you out. The new one that our lovely state is trying to push through is because you know that Pennsylvania is the big state for puppy mills.
Yes.
Now, in Lancaster, if there's a farm and it says we sell dogs, guess what? It's the thing that they're trying to do is they originally put this bill forward for the puppy mill saying that if you have more than 3 breeding females, you have to have a storefront which people can visit as well as open access to your facility. Now, in order to try to kill the bill, some groups or interests said, we'll make it for all animals, everything, from birds to rabbits to fish to reptiles. If you have more than 3 breedable females, you have to have an open facility and a storefront.
Wow.
And it's gathering steam because it's riding the, you know, puppy mills are bad kind of vibe, and it's moving pretty quick. And I'm like, oh, God, stop, die. Fish and Wildlife is saying they cannot enforce it, so that
right.
has kind of stopped things for now.
Right.
I don't know if they're going to keep going, but I have more than 3 breedable females, doy. you have more than 3 breedable females.
Yeah.
So, and I know some other people who have more than 3 breedable females, and I'm like, all right, guess we're all getting a store.
Yeah.
Just get one store and everyone keep their shit in the back.
I have toyed around with that idea.
Yeah, that is something. I mean, but
I don't know what it takes to. I mean, I do retail now, so I'm a retail manager. I basically run a store now. So I mean,
yeah,
it would be the same thing. But yeah, I don't know. Like, what's I don't know what is all entailed in that.
Right, but the thing is that you know when it comes to stores, mom and pop pet stores are dying. I mean, with everything that's mom and pop, especially in our area, PetSmart, Petco, they park, like, you know, they build a building over there and then you're done. I mean, an exotic reptile store might be able to do well, but you're still not going to, you'd have to be big enough and you have to advertise enough to get everybody who has reptiles to come to you. And that's kind of hard, especially with the reptile shows and, you know, if they need a light, they're going to go straight to, you know, PetSmart, Petco, because they can pick up their dog's food on the way. And, you know, running pet stores is tricky. Anyone that, all the ones in the area that I used to go to for live feeders, save one out in the middle of nowhere in Doylestown, have shut down. So it's like if I have a need for live pinkies to get something eating, I have to wait and schedule it around a reptile show.
Right. Yeah, I know. That's true.
But the easy thing is, you know, I work in the lab, so there are always discarded, normal, non-infected mice that just somehow make their way home. But
okay. Probably shouldn't have said that on the radio, but
it's all right, they'll be fine. I really doubt I'm speaking to PETA members right now, am I? That's
right.
What I thought. So it's one of those things. So
yeah.
it's kind of hard, and I don't really know. My collection has grown about threefold in the past year to the point where I'm doing stuff, and I have more carpet python that I thought I'd never have, let alone, you know, half the species I've got. So it's something that I definitely toy with. I plan on retiring and just breeding snakes for a living at some point. I'm not sure if I can leave my job right now in my 20s and do it. But
I think if I went back to it, I think I probably would have did it when I was 20, because then I wanted to, you know, right now it's just hard to let go of the, you know, I'm working hard to get where you're at with money and, you know.
It would be definitely tricky. I, with the student loan payments, I still got cooking and all the other stuff. I it would be very hard to leave my job and do this full time. Very hard to. And I imagine I'd have to go full bore and not just do Pythons. I'd have to start just, you know, I think you got to start wheeling and dealing and stuff too. Just, you know, you have to open the floodgates, all reptiles, whatever you think you can get in, possibly breed, possibly just, you know, make relationships with people so that when you put up a table, you have not just your stuff, maybe potentially you have other breeders, other friends that have stuff that you can get at a discounted price to sell, people you trust. I mean, I'm not saying become a full-fledged dealer or, you know, importer that sells, you know, half-dying, tick-infested monitors for $200. But maybe talk to your buddy who breeds geckos and try to get some babies off him to put on a table. So it's kind of like that. You got to build the connections too.
Yeah, I think, I guess my thought is that, and I just think of it, I always try to think of stuff from a customer's point of view and then apply it to what I'm doing and think if it would be something that I would, you know, if I would go to. And, like, there used to be a reptile store around me. I used to go there all the time, and it closed down. And, you know, I was a pretty regular customer. Well, of course I was, you know. I mean, but it was just cool to just go there and see what they had and, you know, stuff like that. And I think about that, and I think about in my area, and I can't really find any place. I mean, there has to be reptile people around in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and in the surrounding area in Jersey, South Jersey and stuff, that people would come to, you know. I would drive to Jersey if I knew that there was a reptile store that I could buy my feeders at or captive bred babies at, you know, and I knew that I was going to get something that was decent. But that's what I would do if I was going to do that. I mean, I would probably strictly stay with snakes. I'm not really, I mean, you know, and that's what my fear is of doing it full time is, like, I'm afraid that I would lose my passion for it and it would become a job. And that's kind of like where I'm at, because I mean, I guess in my beautiful make-believe world, everybody loves carpet pythons and scrub pythons.
Everyone does it.
You know, and not everybody does, you know, and it's not everybody's thing, but I don't know if you would be able to successfully run a storefront business breeding pythons, but, you know, right. I don't know.
Well, you know, you never do know, and it's, I mean, I know that there's a store over the bridge in New Jersey that does stuff for parrots, like exotic parrots and things like birds like that, and I know there are people here who drive over there and around there because they can get, you know, well-started baby macaws and all this other stuff. Everything's bred in the country, yada, yada, yada. They can get cages and supplies and things like that. And people go there to do it. And, you know, I'm like, I always think every once in a while, well, if it works for a bird store, why the hell wouldn't it work for a reptile store? And I've been to this place called Birds of Paradise right over there. It is huge. It is huge. And it's a great place. And they have every type of bird, and they have, like, pictures of its mom and dad. They breed it in-house. They do all sorts of stuff. So it's like, okay, so if these guys can do it here, why can't it work for, you know, reptiles? But I don't know. I also, on the other hand, have friends who have tried running their own, like, legitimate pet store with dogs, cats, and all this other stuff, and they couldn't stay open. It's all location and craziness, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's harder to compete with the, you know, the Petcos and the PetSmarts when you're just running a straight up pet store. I would imagine that, you know, that's probably
store maybe.
Yeah, I would think. I mean, I don't know. I would think that's where I would go, but I guess not everybody's like me. But I don't know. Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, like, I think about, I mean, just even going to a reptile show or, you know, I had talked to you the other day or so, and I was asking about feeder mice, where I can get feeder mice, you know, feeders. And I went on Rodent Pro, which is usually where I go. But usually they have a sale on the stuff that I wanted, and they didn't. And the price was just like, it was.
Oh, I hate it.
It was crazy, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I started fishing around. I actually ended up going with Mice Direct. I tried them out. The shipping was cheaper because I guess it comes over a few days or, you know, or something like that.
Right.
You know, I guess we'll see how that works out. But, you know, it would be so much more convenient for me if I had, like, a Hamburg show that was at a show, you know, and I could just show up. And, I mean, that's what I used to do. And I don't know. I can't get into breeding my own rodents, even though I'm sure it would probably be beneficial, but I just can't. I don't know. I couldn't do it.
No, I understand, and I can't do it either. And I'm kind of in the same boat. I got rat pinks. I had a friend of mine pick up some rat pinks for me, but he got me the wrong size. And I'm like, okay, baby carpet pythons, this is way too big for you, and I got nothing. Oh, God. So it's like, it's right now it's just trying to kind of dig through and find the smallest ones to try to feed these guys until I can get to the show on the 28th. Then I can buy the right size rat pinks. But then I have, like, 50 rat pinks that are too big for anything I own at this point. They have to sit in the freezer and wait. And it's like, oh, God, if I could just run to a store now, just pick these things up, start feeding, and just keep going.
But, yeah. I mean, just on that alone, I would think that if you were doing that kind of specialty shop, I think the feeders would be where I would focus on. Probably if I had my own shop at that point, I may even breed, you know, I'd pay like my little brother or somebody to come in and breed the rodents or something like that.
Be there,
you know,
feed
I mean?
The rodents.
Feed them and water them, and my wife would probably even take care of them for that. But, you know, I just, me personally, with my asthma, allergy, stuff like that, I just couldn't do it.
Oh, that would kill you.
Mo's with me, too. She says no way. She is in, she has no parts of them. They stink. Barf.
They do. They do. They, every once in a while, mom rat will just decide the babies look delicious, and then now you're out a bunch of pinkies. There's a lot of stuff going into breeding rooms. They're horrible creatures. But you got people like, you know, Nick Mutton, who says, like, he breeds his own rodents, to which I have to say, you know, again, what you said, the full time you could possibly breed your rodents, that is the only time I think I would actually have any time to even consider breeding my own rodents. Because it's like a day I spend about an hour or two downstairs because, you know, baby carpets are like, flip the water dish, yeah, and, like, you have to clean them. And then you have the adult shit over here. That one needs to be fed over here. And I imagine spending 2 hours, 3 hours in the snake room when I'm cleaning everybody and then having to go across to the rodent room where I got to do that all over again. And no, there's just not enough time in the world.
Yeah.
It's so much easier just to thaw out the food and go. But you're right. I think if you have the feeders and if you have the stuff that you know people are going to need in between the shows, emergency stuff, and then you have good stock, good animals to sell to, I think you could survive. You would have to go, like I said, full bore and be that shop, like that one we just talked about, the Birds of Paradise in Jersey, you'd have to be that good of a place that people would be willing to drive to you.
Yeah.
That's the only way, is you have to make sure you have what people want, what people need at the price that people are willing to pay right away. No excuses. So that's kind of sucky.
Yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. Another topic I was going to hit on today is shipping in the heat.
Oh, God.
I know that a lot of people talk about shipping in the cold, But I got to be honest, I haven't really shipped. I've shipped a couple packages and that's it. But I would much rather ship in the cold than I would in the heat. What's your thoughts?
It's terrifying either way. I have actually lost one baby DOA due to heat. It wasn't, I didn't ship it on a hot day. Its heat pack fell and somehow managed to fall on top of the deli cup, and the snake couldn't go away from the heat and she died in transit. Now, if that little heat pack could cook the snake, weather like this is terrible. I actually have cold packs from All Pro Shipping. The guys who do Ship Your Reptiles. And
right.
The cold pack is like this, like, it's just like almost like egg crate kind of thing that you soak in water and then you freeze. And
okay.
It holds the frozen, like, it acts like a ice pack. And it's good, like, frozen for almost 24, 48 hours. And on days like this, and they're small, too, they're very small, like the size of a folded dollar bill. And
okay.
That's enough to cool down the cage, to cool down the box enough so that you can ship them out in 97-degree weather and the box is like 80 degrees. So that is easy. Cold things, when you're shipping in cold weather, you can do that with a simple heat pack, but what I suggest is you take the styrofoam wall out of one of the boxes and use your packing tape and tape the heat pack to the wall and then put it back in. This way the heat pack's not going to move, and the animal, if it gets too hot, can move to one part or the other part of the box. It's almost like you're setting up a mini cage to ship, and it's really freaky sometimes, especially when somebody calls you and says, we're in Arizona, we can't deliver to your guy's house, so we're going to send it back to you, but it might take a few days. So this is one I like to suggest. Get a very good yelling voice and tell them that's not acceptable.
Right.
You'll be amazed what people will do when you tell them that this is unacceptable and that you're trying to run a company and they're screwing it up. So it's one of those things. But it is definitely scary, but to prefer which one to the other, I've shipped out reptiles when it was like there was snow on the ground here with a heat pack, and they got there fine. I guess cold would be easier.
Yeah, I guess it's just easier to regulate. I don't know. It's just my thoughts. I mean, one of the things, Mo is agreeing with me, but one of the things that I've seen people do is that they wait till the absolute latest they can get it out the day before, and then they ask them to hold it at the hub, and then they can go and pick it up. But one of the things that I saw, it was actually over on the Bush League, and they were talking about it, is that what do you do if the hub is air-conditioned and you put it in, a cold pack in there, and, what do you do? So you're on the fence. Do you put it in a cold pack in the air conditioning, and then the snake gets too cold? If they're there all day, but then you don't want the snake to get too hot. So,
well, here's the thing is that if you put in a cold pack, cold packs are small enough, and even if the hub is air conditioned, right now, I used to ship to people's houses, and this is getting far too freaky to me. So now we're shipping from hub to hub. I live in Jenkintown, which is just outside Philly, and the hub for our area is Fort Washington, which is 20 minutes down the road. And I can drop off a package as late as 8 o'clock at night, and they will guarantee arrival by 10:30 the next morning. So I wait until – I usually come rolling in until about – I drop the package off, I think, about like 7:50. I'm in their parking lot dropping it off. And,
okay.
And the thing is, they all know me because there have been three times I've tried to drop a package off there, and there's three times they tried to stop me, saying I don't have the proper paperwork. So after, that, they now all know me. They know who I am. They know I have the paperwork. They know what's in the box. They take it, fine, whatever, and then they send it. Now, I send on, because I have permission to do this through FedEx, I have labels slapped all over it telling it's a live, harmless reptile, and arrows pointing this way.
and they still are not going to do anything. Like, you know, they're not going to bring it into the air-conditioned office. They're going to stick it out with their other boxes. If they hear something moving in there, their actual procedure is to put it in the bathroom and lock the door.
Really?
So, yes. My buddy, I went with one of my friends to pick up black throat monitors, and it was in the bathroom behind a locked door, and the box was intact. The thing was just moving around in there. Once they hear noises, they put it in the they put it behind a locked door in case it gets loose.
Okay.
So it's one of those things. But I've actually what I just said about the Arizona thing. The reason that that box is going to be shipped back is because nobody wanted to put it on the truck in Arizona at the FedEx store because it said live harmless reptiles and people were freaking out. So it's one of those things where they just got to get it off the truck and into the hub and then it can sit there. And it's not going to be that bad. And plus, most hubs are not pumped to 60 degrees, you know, cool. So I don't think you need to worry about that too much. But with that being said, shit always does tend to happen.
Yeah, I think I would probably – I think my rule of thumb is going to be probably would hold off, I think. I don't know.
Hub to hub is the way to go because, again, you can – it's so much easier that way to just –
The only thing I worry about is if I'm breeding snakes that, you know, I mean, you know, I don't know. What if I can't replace it? Well, you know, I mean, I don't know.
Well, then you may have the worst possible thing happen to you. You could have a DOA. You can have like that. Say that was your last JAG female and, you know, something bad happened and now you got to replace the animal. You can always, first off, just, you know, say you want to replace the animal and replace the animal, then offer something like, you know, like, okay, now I can replace, I don't have any more JAG females, but I can offer you this JAG male, and you know what, I'll throw in this female sib. Yeah, you can do stuff like that. If you go the extra mile for the customers, you come out in the end looking like, you know, they appreciate that. If you can just, you know, do a little bit more than say, the other guy. Now, I know dealers and other people who something drops dead, you come back to them and they go, that sucks.
Wow. Well, that's just bad.
Or they just go, okay, well, here, take this one, and they hand you something else. Then that thing dies. And they come back and they do the same thing over and over and over again. They don't care. So by you being able to just kind of step with it.
Right.
You're okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So.
I guess the we're talking about dealers and stuff like that, and I actually caught a cool episode of, I don't know if you listen to any of the other reptile podcasts or blog talk radio reptile things, but Urban Jungles Radio did a pretty cool episode on the top 10 worst reptiles to buy at a reptile show. I thought it was pretty interesting. Well, just because of the overall, it's not good for the animal. They can't be kept in captivity, and you know, somewhat. They were going to get some flack back, I guess, for it because there are some breeders that can keep and breed these animals, but I know it was like the anole, the red-eared slider turtle, and they're just sitting in tubs, tables at shows, and I don't know. I thought that was a pretty cool episode. Yeah, I know you just were saying about flippers, dealers, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, you're right, and like those are the guys who get like, you know, truckloads worth of monitor, and like, you know, they'll pick out the ones that are still breathing and then they'll just be like, okay,
yeah, I don't like that, man. That's not cool. I don't like that, and they just want to make money and make a buck, and it's not about the animal, and you know, I don't know, I don't like that, but anyway, that's for another show. But if you have time,
that's somebody else's problem.
Yeah. I guess the next thing I wanted to talk about is probably going to be somewhat, I guess I might piss people off with this one. I don't know.
You're right.
I'm not supposed to piss people off, but
I will.
Pricing was a big thing. You know, wondering where to set your prices for things, especially with new morphs and new things coming out. And let me just say before anybody takes this the wrong way or gets offended or anything like that, by any means, I do not believe that snakes should be $5,000 for as long as they can be. I understand that the price is going to drop. And to be honest with you, I kind of like the idea that the price does drop. I think it opens up the market more. I just don't understand why it drops so freaking fast. I just don't understand why people I deal in retail. For the life of me, I cannot figure why
how
you
quick
it drops. And an animal that you spend time doing, and I get. I guess I'm not going to make sense here because I'm going to contradict myself. I mean, I get
it
that the price is going to drop, but I just don't understand why everybody thinks that every year a price has to drop on something. Where does this notion come that, you know, well, it's 2013. Last year I got this for my animals, so this year I'm going to drop them by $500 or $5,000. You know what I mean?
Right.
Is it because the market is getting flooded? Is it because...
No, I don't think it is. I think people are making that part up. If you kept your whatever the hell is it, $5,000, try it again the next year at $5,000. And then, if you can't sell them, then drop it. But don't open with a lower price. That's just stupid.
Yeah.
Continue. I'm sorry. I interrupted your rant. It was a good one, too.
And you know, I guess I never really thought of this because I guess when I was acquiring my collection, it wasn't really something. I mean, I thought about it, but I never really thought about it. If that makes sense, you know what I mean? I was just so, you know, I don't know. I never really focused on something like that as far as pricing. I just figured, you know, the pricing is going to be that, and I just put my snakes at what I think they're worth, and, you know, if I don't sell them, then that's just more for me to hold on to, you know? Because I'm a lot like Luke in the way that I've heard him say, you know, a few times on the show that basically he breeds snakes to make snakes for himself, and then he sells the others to sort of, you know, fund his hobby. And, yeah, I kind of agree, you know. I kind of do the same thing, you know. I'm kind of making snakes for me, and in the meantime, I'm going to have cool things to go along that I can sell and, you know, hopefully make a little money at and, you know, or fund my hobby, even if I just break even. But, you know, I don't know. I just don't understand it. I don't get it. You know, I think about citrus tigers, and I paid a pretty penny for citrus tigers. And I just wonder, you know, next year when I make that super citrus tiger, I'm going to have a hard time selling it for, I see tigers now, 200, 300, you know, I don't know, man. I think they're worth more than that. And I guess if I put them up and I think people would buy them because, you know, they just look cool. But I don't know. I just don't understand how it comes up. And like, if somebody else sets the price, I would think that they would, you know, contact you or, you know, people would talk that are in that project and say, hey, listen, this is what I think the price should be. I mean, people can sell their snakes for whatever price they want. It doesn't really matter to me what you sell your snakes for. I don't really give a crap. It doesn't make a difference to me because I'm going to sell my snakes for what I think they're worth. And if you don't think they're worth that, then you're not going to buy it. And that's just that simple. you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's something that, you know, really needs to be addressed, because, you know, I don't want to see the same type of thing happen to the carpet market that happened to the ball python market. And I don't know. I don't know how you are, Owen, but I don't really look at, and maybe because, you know, I'm fortunate, I have a good job, whatever, you know, my situation is good. But I just don't understand why, if I wanted, you know, I don't know, if I wanted this special animal, you know, I'll use Mo as a jungle jack. If I want a jungle jack, well, you know what? I know, and I'm going to pay a little more for that than maybe somebody else that has it on Kingsnake or something like that. But goddamn, I'm going to get something that's going to be killer. I mean, it's just like the gamma jags. You know, it's just like, you know, gamma jags are still going for a pretty penny. But, you know, you're getting that quality of a snake. And I know when we had Nick on here before, I know he talked about that, you know, my snakes are going to sell themselves. And he said that was bullshit. And, you know,
right.
I just think that I think about breeders with their, you know, I think of Luke with his red jack. I mean, look what Jason posted up today with his red tiger.
Red tiger, yeah.
And, you know, I mean,
my red tiger does not look like that. When she was a baby.
Right. But he's worked a long time to produce something like that. And, you know, I don't know. Again, if I sold my snakes for $100 a piece,
you'd sell out and be done.
And I would
have
sell
a nice
out,
lot of money.
And I would still be making my money back. So it's not have to do with making my money back. I just don't understand why people think that the price needs to drop. And now I have I'm sort of in a pick. I don't want to be the guy that – we were talking about this before the show. I don't know where to price super jags at. I don't know where to put them at. Is it worth any more because it has a tiger gene in it? I don't know.
I think – and this is something that, you know, it harkens back to you're going to get what you paid for. I paid close to $1,000 for my red tiger, Azen, when Jason first produced them. And I spent that money because I knew I was getting into something that I wanted to get into. She was gorgeous, and she was pretty, and she was red, and she's what I wanted. And I got the male, same clutch as her. They're clutch mates. I got my male Orion 3 years later for close to $200. And that was just, I mean, he doesn't have as complete of a stripe as her, but he's still just as pretty. And it's just a price drop. You know, we had girls, he had just when they came out, he had all those stuff. So now it could have been just because Jason wanted to make some cage space. It could have been because I know Jason and I bought several things from him, but whatever. The price drop is definitely something scary because I used to talk at it as jaguar, carpet pythons, and spider ball pythons came into my world at the same time. Like, I found out about both of them around the same time. And they're both kind of priced around the same range, about, you know, $2,000 a piece. The next year, jags had dropped to where I could get one. That's when I got my first jag. Spider balls had dropped considerably, like, had dropped further. By the next year, spiders dropped even further. And then, like, within 2 years, when my jag was still worth close to or above $1,000, spider ball was all the way down close to $200 in some tables. The drop can be definitely scary. The thing is that there needs to be more people out there who are not just trying to, of course you want to go to the show, of course you want to make some sales, you want to, you know, make some money to pay for your rats, to pay for the table, to get food at the show, to have a good time, but it doesn't matter if you sell it here, you'll sell it someplace else. I had babies left over from 2011, and I'm no rush at all to sell them. I have my set jag price, which is close to $500. I don't like going below $400 for a jag. I don't.
It's
right.
Not because I don't, like, I've seen people sell Jags for 250. I've seen people sell Jags for 150 just to get them off a table because they were young. It's, I know the quality of my animal, and I also know that you're paying for my experience as a breeder. Is if that thing doesn't eat, you call me, I'll talk you through it. I'll help you out. I mean, there are breeders like that who stand behind stuff all the time. I mean, I was talking to Jason, and he said that he had to take his zebra back from a customer because it wasn't eating, and he got it back eating, and then he gave it back to the customer. It's you, that is what you pay for, too, and that's what people got to realize, is if you set the bar real low with your pricing, you're really not – because like I told you before the show, I could go out at the next reptile show on the 28th, throw everything out there for $50 to $100, sell, be good, have a great freaking year. I can even bring my hatchlings that are just coming out of their eggs right now and sell them too, but I don't want to do that because I don't want to release an animal on the market that isn't feeding. I don't want to give a bad reputation to myself or to carpets in general because of what I'm doing. And I don't want to hurt my friends in the business who have put time and money into fantastic projects that, you know, I'd feel like if I – say I started producing jungle jags and I started cutting the prices and that, you know, trampled on those, I'd feel really bad about that because I don't want to do that. I want – everybody has their slice and their niche, and nobody here is doing this just to – at least nobody in the Morelia concept that I can find is doing this to make a quick buck. You're doing it because you love it. You're working with the animals because you love it, and that's I can't cut the prices, but it is definitely hard. I mean, I was talking to you. You and I have been – this is a topic that you and I have had private conversations about, like, all summer.
Yeah.
What the hell do we do with pricing is because you have your zebra jags, and then I have my caramels here, and it's like, what the hell do we put these as? Like, what do we count it as bigger? What makes the price go up? What makes it go down? I say I'm probably going to set high, and then if somebody wants to try to talk me down, they're welcome to. But I guarantee you I'll either find that good price that people are willing to pay for, or there are going to be people who are going to be willing to pay for it. And then
yeah.
That's it.
I mean, I guess, like I said earlier in the show, when I approached the when I approach things, I approach it from a customer's point of view. And I approach it from how I look at it as a customer. And you're absolutely right that when I'm going and buying something, I'm looking at the breeder because I want to be able to call the breeder if I have a problem or, you know, walk me through things. I mean, this year is a perfect example. I mean, I bought the red tigers from Jason, and, you know, I bought animals from Luke. And, you know, this season they laid eggs for me. So when, you know, I had issues or whatever, you know, I was able to contact them, and they were able to walk me through it. You know,
right.
and I felt good that, you know, they're gonna care because, you know, it's animals that they made and you know they did and that you can't put a price on, you know.
No.
So I guess I understand. I mean, and carpets and just Morelia in general, with it being so variable, you definitely, I think, things should be based on more of a gradient. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, you're going to have nice caramels and you're going to have ugly caramels, but it's still a caramel, but they're an ugly caramel, you know. And definitely, if you want the best of the best, I mean, jungles are the same way. You know, if you want that screaming black and yellow jungle,
you know where to go.
Yeah. Well, look at Chris B. Chris Payhoff. I mean, you know, he's got that Johnny Blaze and what do you call it, pairing? I forget the female's name. But tell me that people aren't going to be lined up to want one of those jungles. You know, and I bet you he can price his jungles at $1,000 a piece and, you know, people would pay it. You know I would pay it because I would want something from that because I would want to make myself screaming jungles, you know, because I know that the quality is there, and, you know, the selective breeding has been done, and these animals were handpicked by this breeder, and, you know, they put the time and the effort into that, and I don't know, I think that's worth a lot, you know.
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, I know you said that Nick says, like, snakes will sell themselves, and that's true to an extent, you know, but it's, I've actually been at shows where some guy came, this was like my first year breeding, and he bought about 10 of my baby carpets, just normal carpets, normal coastals. And then I'm at a show, and it turns out that he had a table at the same show. And I'm there with the displays, and my carpets were a little bit bigger, and I was actually charging more for price. And
right.
He was charging less. But he was there, and he had a bunch of Chinese food containers, and his, you know, my carpet pythons had a bunch of other animals on this table with no tablecloth and no nothing, and just kind of sitting there, no business cards. I sold probably 7-8 animals. He didn't sell a single one. It's you got to sell it too, but it, the certain, just to get an animal off a table price drop is what kills me. Like, I'll try to actually match other carpet breeders at a show. And if I do drop a little bit, it's because of good reason. Like, you know, this one here is smaller than all the other ones because it was an annoying feeder and it didn't really pick off, and now it's rolling, but it's still tinier. So if you want a bigger one, you can pay this price. If you want a smaller one, you can pay that price. Stuff like that. But it's never more than, like, you know, $20 less. But it's
right.
Good to kind of talk with each other and kind of, you shouldn't try to, like, cut the ankles out of each other.
I guess let me just make sure that everybody understands where I'm coming from so I can just backtrack for a second, because I know I'm sort of talking
right.
in circles and such, but you can, I have no problem with people selling their snakes for whatever they think they want to sell them for. But I think when a breeder is going and selling their snakes, they have to think about other breeders. Me and Sean talked about the whole culling thing. And, you know, everybody was up in arms about that, and the thread came up. But, you know, Sean and myself are coming from an angle of thinking about the other breeders in this hobby and what they've worked to achieve in keeping lines pure and not muddying up the gene pool even worse than it already is. You know, so we're trying to be responsible. I think that the same, you know, and again, if you're like, for instance, if I'm going to sell you something, Owen, you know, obviously
right.
I'm going to give you some kind of deal. But I would hope that you're not going to go and tell everybody, hey, Eric, just sold me this zebra jag
oh
or whatever
God,
it was. You know what I mean?
You know,
but obviously
yeah.
your return customers, you know, or people that, you know, you're obviously going to get some kind of price break, and that's fine. And I don't care what, but do it behind closed doors. And, you know, nobody will know. But I just think that, you know, I guess with my snakes, I'm going to take the approach that I'm going to sell them for what I think they're worth. If people want to buy them, then so be it. If they don't, then that's just more for me to hold on to. I mean, like, I'm looking at my IJ clutch this year, and there's some in there that are screamers, and there's some in there that are okay. You know, the ones that are screamers, I think they're worth $200. You know, maybe other people don't. I see prices of IJs, you know, they're maybe, I don't know, $100, $125. But I think some of them in there could be worth, I would pay $200 for them. You know,
that's my thing, is if I would pay this amount of money for it, or if I know that it's this amount of money, or if it was this amount of money last year, I'm going to aim for it, and that's what I'm going to put. And then if I got to drop a little bit for a customer who's like saying, well, I'll pay this much, maybe, but I do have my limits. But it's like you have to set the price at whatever it is. I mean, and it's hard with these. You've got to have this problem like crazy.
Yeah.
Especially with that zebra the zebra jag clutch, because you got tigers in there, you got zebras in there, you got zebra jags in there, you got jags in there. What the hell do you call what?
Well,
what does price what? Where does what go? I mean,
obviously a zebra. Yeah, obviously a zebra that's from that pairing is not worth the same price as a pure zebra jungle. But that's
exactly
a different
kind
of. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I would, you know, if I'm just going to throw a number out there, let's say that a zebra goes for $1,200. You know,
right.
A zebra female, $1,200. All right, well, maybe that snake's worth $800 then.
Right.
You know, because you're not going to get that screaming yellow that you might get that.
That you get out of like a jersey. But now, when you talk about culling, and culling mixes and mutts, would you consider culling a mutt zebra?
No, and I'll tell you why. Because I think when you're going to produce, I think that animal could be used, for instance, if you're going to make zebra jags.
That
right?
could be something good to have more coastal blood in it.
Why wouldn't you want to get, what do you care if it's a pure zebra or not at that point?
True. True.
Because you're only going to make mutts out of it anyway.
Right,
or
are
whatever
you concerned at all that the zebra that you sell to somebody as being a 50% coastal blood, are you concerned with that somehow getting turned around and sold as a pure jungle?
Well, I guess in theory, I guess you it could. I mean, but again, I guess when you're talking about morphs, it's much easier to... pick out than, you know,
right.
A Darwin IJ cross. You know what I mean?
Oh, God. Yeah.
You know, and even if it's something that's a het, like, okay, for instance, if you're going to take, if I'm going to make a het for snows, obviously they're going to be IJ coastal mix. You know? I mean, I'm sorry, Darwin coastal mix.
Darwin.
So,
right.
So they're going to be Darwin Coastal Mix. They'll probably look like IJs or, you know, something in that area. But they're going to be hets. And that's what's going to make them worth something. So
right.
Nobody's going to go out and say that this is a IJ. That's, I mean, I guess they could, but I don't see the type of person that would want that animal doing that, if that makes sense.
Right.
And then the value in it is the fact that it's a het.
Right. And I guess people wouldn't, like, you know, if you're dropping more than, you know, $100, $200 on, you know, an animal, you can't really, like, I don't think you're the kind of person that would burn it and sell it for something in what it is. Like, you know, say, like, you know, if this was like a $100 mutt that you sold to somebody who was like, you're like, listen, it is a 50-50. And then they would turn around and sell it as a pure coastal because they can sell it as a pure coastal with funky coloring for like $200, $50 profit for them, woohoo. But if it's a zebra coastal and you're paying more money for it, you're not the kind of person who's willing to, if you're willing to drop that money on this morph and this animal, you're not the kind of person that's willing to turn around and burn it for money, that I would think. So I guess
right.
The whole mutt being confused with pure is more happening in the siblings and the normals, the ones that could be confused. I guess, like, if it goes to get further into morphs, people are really going to be truthful if they're selling it, because that's just the way the kind of people are going to be their customers. At least I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. With the whole, I just lost my train of thought because it's I got so many thoughts going through my head at this point. I guess with the whole that argument with the pure and the, you know, the mutts. I mean, I guess it can be used. I guess you're going to see that come full circle now. I think the more and more that people are breeding, mixed carpets and mixing them up, it's going to become more and more of an issue. I kind of think to a certain extent that it's going to make guys that are breeding pure subspecies more in demand, if that makes sense. Because I guess if you're looking for that type of animal, you're going to know who has it, and you're going to seek them out, and they're going to be the only ones that have that type of animal, would be my thinking. But, you know, I guess, you know, in that circumstance, then, if somebody wants a pure coastal that they know they can track lineage back, you know, they're probably going to Nick because they know that that's what he deals in, you know. But if you're just looking to make zebra jags, why would you go and spend, I guess if you wanted to just do a project for yourself, you know, and you had, you know, you could get a zebra that was mixed, you know, why would you go and get a pure one if that's not your plans, you know? Because if you got a jungle jag and then you went and got a, you know, if you got a badass jungle jag from Mo and then bred it with a zebra, well, you know that you've already selectively bred, you're going to get
coastal. Yeah.
You're going to get decent colored, you know, jags, zebra jags out of that, and then you would hold them back and then keep selectively breeding or whatever. But, you know, it got you into the project, I guess, is what I'm saying. But I guess the zebra jags that I, the zebras that I have this year, they're all kind of red. So
that helps.
It'll be easier to pick out, but
If anybody's trying to sell anybody a red zebra, it's one of Eric's. Blame him.
So. Yeah, it's easier to trace back to me, right?
It is. Some scary stuff out there when it comes to stuff. There's a Mac, a jaglot on Fauna for the longest time. I'm like, it looks like one of my panels. Oh, God. So it's, that's scary. But, you know, it's one of those things that when it comes to the price drop, it's, again, it all harkens back to responsible breeding. Everything, every problem that is in the reptile world, the reptile industry, and in ourselves is poor breeders, poor, you know, sellers, poor customers, whatever. It all comes back to us. If you breed, if you sit down and you draw up your plans for breeding, know what's going to come out, know what the market's going to do. If you don't, if you're unwilling to sit on a clutch of normal coastals, don't breed them.
Yes.
Then if you're going to set prices, if you have something that is either the first or second or is very rare, talk to the people who also own it. I know some people are very close-minded about projects. If you're in the same project, if you're going to be producing around the same time, they will speak to you, I promise. If not, just to say, hey, what you got? Oh, cool. What you doing? All right. So what do you think about pricing them at? I'm not really sure. I was thinking about here. Cool. End of conversation. You've learned something.
Right.
Then just stick to your damn guns with the price. There's always going to be – I've had people – this poor bastard came up to me at a show, and I guess he caught me at the end of a show, and it was the wrong kind of a day, and he said, Jags? Huh. I can get them for $100. And I just looked up to him and I said, then why the hell are you hanging around here? Quick, go to the table with the $100 jags. And the guy just looked at me and walked off. It's whatever it is. People are going to lowball you. You don't have to give in to them. Even if you're having the worst possible day, you haven't sold shit, take it home. You'll always, somebody will come and buy it. It's no reason for that. And then just follow through. Don't sell to the schmuck with the hat that wants to scare his sister with a snake, okay? He's not going to be helpful either.
Yeah. I think that you're absolutely right. You hit a good point, and it's kind of like one of the things that we wanted to hit on with this whole conversation is Mo said, stop lowballing her, damn it.
Every time I see her, she's got that goddamn jungle jack, take me home, stop it. Sell it to me for cheap, or stop bringing it. Can't. Anyway.
Yeah, and the that if you can't, if you're not prepared to hold on to the animal that you're about to breed, it's a responsibility. That you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You shouldn't just stick two animals together for the sake of putting them together. It's just that
simple. Yeah, or talking about like, oh, just wholesale this clutch and then we'll move in, or, you know, I'll drop these babies. So like, you know, $20 a pop. It's like, you know, what you're doing just as because somebody else is trying really hard to do that as a project, I guarantee it. Because, like, you know, I could breed my panel female with whatever the hell and take those babies, and they'll just be normal coastals, but they'll be panel coastals, and I'll sell them for, you know, $60. Whereas you, with your panel trio, could be, like, trying to make something, like, you know, a really high yellow carpet python, you know, a really something-something carpet python, and then now we're at a show, and I have panel coastals, and you have panel coastals, and mine are $50, and yours are $120. It's like it's really kind of hurting.
See, like, people. Right? And you know, panel coastals would be a perfect example. I mean, those coastals are freaking gorgeous.
Yes,
they are, man. They're just beautiful. Anybody that thinks that a coastal is a dull, drab animal. And you know,
them and show them panel coastals.
You have to see these things, man. They got this lavender hue to them. They have all these different. Oh my God, they're just
yellows.
Beautiful. I mean, the girl I have has like a solid tan khaki head and like purple saddles, and oh my God, it's just gorgeous. There is no way that I would part with one of them for less than $200. It's just period. I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it. I mean,
that's what I think is a really good looking coastal should be $200, and that keeps your basement for all your morphs. So if a really good looking coastal is $200, anything that is anything genetic needs to be above $200. So Jags can never go below $200 in my opinion, never. If you need the ugliest looking Jag, it's at $200 or $250.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Everything has got to be that way, in my opinion.
Yeah. I guess I agree. I mean, but, you know, I mean, I have some Jags that I purchased in groups and whatnot that I still have in my collection.
Different prices.
That probably shouldn't be in
pricing and,
yeah, but probably shouldn't be in my collection. But I'm not going to get rid of them because I'm, you know, I don't know. I like all my snakes that I have. I really like them. But almost telling me 200 is too low. I have to go higher than that. But I'm just throwing
that out. Well, that's
because
most Jags come out at like $900. And...
yeah.
Sorry, I digress.
But like, you know, another one, you know, we're just talking about pure subspecies because now I'm looking at all these people typing me stuff as I'm going and I'm trying to keep talking. That's why I keep getting distracted a little bit. But anyway.
What's going on?
It's on the Facebook.
At?
Yeah,
Facebook.
I got two people going up. No, that's cool. I got Pete talking to me, and I got Mona talking to me. So it's cool. But you know, because they're bringing up good points, and they're getting me going. But the striped jungles, you know, I mean, let me first start by saying that I have been waiting for something from the skunk flower pairing since I first got into carpet python because I thought they were absolutely the cool. I mean, here it is. Not only is it a pure jungle, okay, but it's got a badass stripe on it. I mean, it's freaking solid stripe down. And not only that, I kind of like the jungles with the tipping, you know, and I think that, you know, that's just the style of jungles that I kind of like, you know? So here it is. I have an unrelated pair that look. I mean, you've seen them. They're freaking badass. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. I'm excited when you breed them because I want a girl for my zebra. So do that now.
Yeah, but there's no way. I mean, I see them worth $1,000. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but if I have a solid stripe, like the kind you see in Australia with the crazy tipping on the side, I mean,
or
come
a tiger.
On.
Tiger. I mean, you're looking like a tiger pattern on a jungle with tipping. Yeah, okay, you're right. It should be priced at that because it's a project that you worked at.
Yeah.
So.
And again, I don't know if they would sell that price, but I don't really care.
More for me.
I'm holding on to every single one of them. You know what I mean? And obviously, if I got a full-striped one, then I think it should be the top. And then, obviously,
yeah.
If you don't have a stripe, then obviously the price is going to drop a little bit, you know? And then for the normal ones that are in that clutch, they're not going to be the same prices as the fully-striped ones, obviously. Just because they're from that clutch doesn't, you know, even though that's kind of a... you know, the gene is still in there, and if you breed it to a striped animal, you're going to probably, you know, get striped animals back. So that has to be or something, which is kind of like where I sat with the zebra tiger jags, is the fact that it has tiger in the blood. Does that mean that, you know, that does that add value to the zebra jag? Because I can go get a zebra jag, and maybe I will get striping. But who knows if you breed it back to a tiger, what's going to happen? I don't know. Maybe nothing. You know what I mean? Maybe it'll just reduce the pattern like it does on a tiger jag. You know,
maybe.
Who knows? But you won't know until you breed it back to a tiger and see what happens. But you know, just projects like that. I think of Luke's IJ projects that he does. You know, I think of even Mo with her straight jungles. I mean, you know, you're talking about animals that are just, oh my God, they're unbelievable. They're just amazing. You know, They should be priced that way. If you go to a reptile show, I think that's what's going to stand out to me. I think, and I could be wrong, and I guess this is why I kind of wanted to start this show too, was another reason for this. It's like for people that are getting into Morelia, I remember when I first got into Morelia and it was so overwhelming because not only do you have morphs, but you have different subspecies and you have,
locality.
You know, I mean, there's all these different things going on. And it's like, oh, my God, I can't keep this shit straight. You know, and I want people to be educated, you know, and make sure that you're buying from a breeder, a reputable breeder that breeds and loves, you know, carpet pythons or scrub pythons or green tree pythons or any kind
animals
of snake
in general.
Yeah, it just doesn't matter, you know, but, you know, make sure that you're researching who you're getting from and buy from them because you're not only buying their animal, you're buying their experience. You're buying their knowledge. You're buying their time and their effort that they put into the project to take it to where it's at, you know. And
right.
That's my, you know, soapbox rant of the week.
Well, now, because you and I were talking about the pricing of my caramels and things like that, and you gave me some sound advice, too, and you said it's, the price that you think people should be willing to pay to enter in a project that you've put heart and time into. It's not just what is the animal is. It's you're also paying to get into a project when you're talking about morphs and things like that. You know, I could, you know, if, say, I buy an animal from you and I do something crazy with it, now I'm in the project, but I might be a step ahead of you. Or to the right of you, or in a different way, or something. I could do something, but then I gouge the prices, and now that part of that project is been pretty much like that limb of that tree has been cut off because you know somebody set the price low. I got into the morph, and I went crazy with it.
I think another thing too is that if I'm going. If I'm going in and buying a high-end morph,
yeah.
I'll take caramel zebras, for example.
Okay.
When I got caramel zebras, I was the only guy in the U.S. that had caramel zebras.
Yes.
I don't even know what made me want to buy them. I just was looking on Paul's site. I saw them. I was like, you know what? I'm getting this other stuff. Why don't I get this? And I'll be a guy that has – I'll be the only one in this project. So basically what I paid for – is to be ahead of everybody else.
Right.
Now, hoping that I don't totally screw it up. You know, I don't like...
You sound so worried. Like, hoping that I don't screw it up.
You No, I mean, like, you know, I picked the right animals to breed it to. I made sure that I'm taking care of my animals and making sure that, just making sure that I see the project through and I don't do stupid things. I mean, you know, obviously I can breed carpet pythons now, but, you know, I'm ahead of the game. You know
right.
what I mean? So I'm ahead. I paid to be ahead, and that's it. That's the way I look at it. I realized that the price is going to drop. I realized that it's going to come down. And it's going to be nowhere near what I paid for it, and I'm fine with that. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. You know, and the reason what I paid for is not so much the animals. It's I paid to be into the project and ahead of everybody else. So when everybody else is making, you know, maybe this year people will try to make caramel zebras. Who knows? I don't know. I mean, I get there's not even that many zebra jags. So are they going to take their female and breed it to a jag? Or are they going to take their female and breed it to a caramel? You know, who knows? I don't know what people think is more cool. And I guess that really kind of depends on, which is kind of cool that I really like when, you know, over in the UK, obviously over in Europe, that they're ahead of us. With projects as far as carpet pythons go, but you kind of get to see things that are what they're going to look like. You know what I mean? Like, is this going to be cool? Is this not going to be cool? You know, and when I saw the Super Caramel Super Zebra, you know, I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. You know, like the Super Zebra Granite. I kind of worried when I got the, you know, Zebra Heck Granite, you know, this could be crappy, not really be anything, or this could be something. Who knows? You know.
Right.
But it turned out to be cool. I think it's cool. You know. And you know, I'm excited about that and going down that project. But again, who's gonna? I don't know anybody that's gonna breed a granite to a zebra. You know what I mean?
Right.
How many zebra females are out there? And I would think that
not,
the people that had
breedable
zebra,
size, not that many.
Right. And what are they gonna want to try to make?
Are they going to try to make granites? Are they going to try to make super zebras? Are they going to try to do this?
Right.
What am I doing?
I'm just saying, like, I would think that the majority of people would want to be, you know, they're going to want to probably breed a super zebra. That's
right.
What
I think you have, because now you're talking about, like, saying, you're talking about caramel zebras. So you're talking about taking two morphs that are still up on the rise, caramel and zebra. And talking about having some guy who would rather not develop the both of them separately, but rather combine them with, like, say, like, this is his first clutch with the two of them. Like, would you really, like, this year I had to plan, I'm planning Super Caramels this coming season, 2013.
Right.
And that was a choice I made after this season. I wanted to try Caramel Tigers first. Now
right.
I want to try Super Zebra. Now I want to try Super Caramels. But I also, like, I have a zebra, and I have a bunch of other stuff. Am I going to, it's basically what you decide, and rarely ever are you going to decide, like, you know, my zebra, when he's old enough, his first thing that he's going to be bred with is not going to be my female caramel. I mean, I
right.
know I'm not the person to start mixing animals to begin with, the bloodlines, things like that, but I've got so many other plans for both my caramels and my zebra, none of which are anywhere near each other. So it's, you got other things ahead of trying to make caramel zebras. Unless
right.
you have some people out there who, like, say, have seen your caramel zebras and want to do it.
Right. So by the time you're ready to make caramel zebras, I'm probably going to be producing albino caramel zebras.
Exactly.
You see what I mean? And that's
yeah,
kind
of
like what
of
I'm talking about being ahead, you know.
Yes.
Hopefully, and what I mean about not screwing it up and making sure that, you know, I'm thinking about the project. And that's why I sit down and I really map out what I want to do. And I say it time and time again, if you're going to breed, that's something you really should sit down with a piece of paper and a pen and really think about, what is it that I want to do? You know?
Right.
You know,
well, you
what
big book.
What do I want to
will.
Create?
Yeah. So.
You know, I don't know. I just think that
you
know, there's a lot of things going this way
right?
there, but
You had Zebra's head, Granite, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So even then, that's another morph that you're even further ahead on, because the first breeding to even get to where you would get a Granite Super Zebra would be breeding Zebra to the Granite and getting the Hets.
Correct.
And then you have to wait even more years to get those things up and running. So
correct.
It's, so you're further along with that process, too. But you're right. You pay to get into morph at, like, basically you're paying because I've done this much work already.
Right. So you're paying for somebody's work to be ahead of the game. And that's
right.
Kind of the route that I took with my projects, is to try to, you know, I say all the time about jumping into the deep end of the pool, and I'm always trying to stay ahead of that curve and try to, you know, I'm trying to always look to have the cutting edge type of projects, because ultimately my goal is to take those projects and, you know, selectively breed it with the projects over here in the U.S., that have been selectively bred for, you know,
right.
The different, the red coastals, the, you know, the striped jungles, the, you know, and breed all these. I think of the Granites from Peter had,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how crazy they are, and, you know, breeding that with a zebra and breeding that into that line, or Granite Jags, or, you know, or Granite Caramels, you know, stuff like
right.
that. You know, I do have a question. Hold on now. I got to switch my mic. Hold on.
Okay. I'm back.
Okay. We were concerned.
Yeah. So hold on one second. This question came from, Victoria, Elsie.
Okay.
She says, what advice can you give for a breeder who has quality animals, have put the time into breeding them, and know what they are, and know what they are doing, yet are not active on social sites, therefore nobody knows who they are. People will pay X amount of dollars for a tiger from Carrie King, yet she has Carrie King tigers that she bred, and people aren't going to pay me what they would pay him.
Well, My suggestion would be, Facebook is free, and it is so easy to set up. And all you have to do is set up a page for yourself or your business and start promoting yourself. And just because you have there's no reason to think that Kerry King can sell his tigers for more than you can sell your tigers at. If you have Kerry King bloodline tigers, guess what? They're the same damn tiger. So match your price with Kerry King's, and when they ask, say it is Kerry King bloodline, blood stock, and that's what you get. I mean, I will match breeders at shows, and I've matched breeders that, you know, I've got bloodlines from Will Leary and all these other places, and it's the important thing is that, you know, don't sell yourself short with that. It's make your website, talk up your animals, send pictures, and people will believe you if you have pictures of the animal from when it was like a baby all the way up to an adult, and you say it's Kerry King stock and it looks like it's Kerry King stock, they're not going to question you on it, and you definitely should get the same price. There's no reason for that.
Yeah,
I think
with that, I go back to, I've talked a lot with Nick, and for people that don't know, I'm talking about Nick Button. The best advice.
You should really start putting last names into people.
Yeah, I know. In case people don't know who we're talking about. And
yeah, gotcha.
Just to throw Nick out some kudos, he's from Inland Reptiles. But anyway, the best advice that he gave me is he said, listen, Eric, you know, you're buying these high-end snakes and nobody knows who the hell you are.
I will second that. I have no idea who the hell you were
when you first emerged on the forums. I'm like, how the fuck is this guy getting all this shit? Holy crap, he lives in Philadelphia. Oh, I'm out of business. Oh, God, I'm out of business.
And here's the problem with that, is that you have, you know, I could have the, you know, the best snakes in the world, but if nobody knows who the hell I am, are you going to send me $5,000 for, you know, a caramel zebra jag or something like that? Are you going to send that to me? Probably not.
No.
You know, because you don't know me, you don't know my reputation as a breeder, and you don't know anything about me.
That's the first thing you got to do is build up yourself. Build up your company. Choose a name. Get a logo. Go nuts with it.
Right. I think that the, just get in on the forums and getting involved so that people she said something happened. Are you there, Owen?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Yeah. Okay. Just so people just so people know who you are, you should just get involved as far as that. I mean, I think of guys like Peter at the Viking Reptiles. I'm sorry, I don't know his last name.
No,
you don't
do
know
I.
His last name? Too? Okay. Nah. But anyway, his granites are kick-ass. And I don't really see him on the forum.
Yeah.
But I guess he must go to he must be consistent at some shows. So that he brings his animals there, and that's how people know him. But one way or the other, you have to put yourself out there, or people aren't going to know who the hell you are, and they're probably not.
Right.
They're just not. I wonder if we're still going live, because I keep getting people saying that something's going wrong.
Uh-oh, we broke it.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch, we've been censored.
I think it's when you cursed, Owen. They just took us.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Anyway, I think that my advice would be for that is just to make sure that you get your name out there, whether it's Facebook, whether it's at a show, you know, go and talk to people.
Hang around carpet breeders' tables for a while until they ask you to go away. I mean, that's fine.
Absolutely. I used to do that when I would show up to a show.
Yeah,
it would be – you know, I would show up and I would talk. The show went silent on us.
No.
I guess it did. I don't know what happened.
How do we fix it?
I don't know.
Oh, shit.
No, it's still recording.
It's still recording.
Yeah, it's still recording, so.
This is a piece of crap. I mean, we apologize, type of a thingy. We apologize for technical difficulties. Eric pushed a button.
I'm going to put, sorry, it seems
we broke
we're
it.
Still good.
What
I don't know.
What does that mean? It's not helpful at all.
Yeah, I
we're
know.
We're still good,
sorry.
You just can't hear us. So
you'll have to listen back.
Oh, we're back?
I don't know. Maybe
if people can hear me, insult Eric on his Facebook. Go. Tell me what they say.
Know.
No.
Let's see.
Okay. Right. We're so professional. I love it.
All right. That's okay.
Yeah. Okay. So are we back? Are we recording?
Oh, we're back.
Thank God.
We're back. Hello. We're back. We're back. So
we have no idea what happened.
Yeah,
Eric leaned on a button.
Yeah, we're still on. Okay.
Yay. Sorry.
I don't know what I'm saying, but I think my advice would be, you know, to put yourself out there so that people know who you are. I think that definitely makes a difference because you have to build up a reputation. You have to build up a reputation for having good snakes and people know that you take care of them and that you're not, you know, an asshole and that, you know, that you're trustworthy. I think one of the things that I did as far as being a buyer of snakes is made sure that I tried my best to make sure that if I did payment plans that I paid on time and that, you know, I was pretty consistent in making sure that everything that I did was what I said I was going to do. And from a customer standpoint, actually, to be honest, I'd probably love myself as a customer because I'm sure there's going to be customers that tell me that they're going to pay and then they don't pay and then, you know, I get into all this.
I don't know
what your experiences are with that, but, you know, I guess that's for another day. But
I can just say that you as a customer was a joy. I would like a high con, Owen. How about this one? Yes. Oh, well, here we go. So, I mean, it's one of those things that's kind of happened awful quick. So I'm like, all right, come get it. So the other thing is, like, you know, I know she said that she bought into these bloodlines and she thinks she couldn't get the same price. And what I say is you bought into the bloodline. You deserve to reap the benefits of the bloodline. It's, you know, they're Kerry King line animals. Promote them as Kerry King line animals and definitely ask the same prices. So I feel like I would be undersold or something like that if you weren't able to use that. So that's why he puts a name on his animals.
Sure. You know, they trace back to the original tiger line anyway. I mean, we do the same thing. We say Balin Tigers, you know, when we're...
Oh, yeah. I'll throw Jason's name on everything.
We're going to whore out his name on everything we can.
Well, think about it. Let's think quickly. All my red jags, I could trace back to Jason Balin line jaguars. Okay? All my tigers, I can trace back to Jason line jaguars. Every single zebra jag tiger you have right now, you can slap on and say Balin line this. I mean, we could, if we wanted to, just throw stickers on everything and just really just freak him out of the show. I may do this later, but I don't know. I'll implant this seed of evil into Howard's head and let him do it. So
yeah. You know what? Bringing up Howard, I think Howard. I would give kudos to Howard for really, you know, from a business standpoint, that guy tries to push his name on every freaking thing he does. You know what I mean? He's got stickers. Yeah. He's got balloons. He's got T-shirts. He's got,
you
know,
cups.
Put the
stickers on my car. So,
yeah,
I mean,
he's got,
I know he's got stickers.
Pencils and anything you can slap a name on that he's doing it, you know, and people know his name, you know. And
You should be proud of your name and your logo. I mean, dude, I got the T-shirts, the sweatshirts. I got my tire cover on my CRV is Rogue Reptiles. I mean...
Yeah, don't ever get rid of that because that's the only way I know where your house is. I don't look at the street number.
The
I just look
that,
at the little
the
snake
is, eyes. That is unfortunately limited the model of car I will purchase now for the rest of my life. Does it have a tire on the back? No, then I can't buy it. So,
Eric will know
so
where
it's
I live.
Be like, damn it. So it's. Well, I just have to install tire covers on every car I get. But it's one of those things. Like, you should, because that's another thing, is another way of putting yourself out there is just, like, I wear my T-shirt. I have several Rogue T-shirts. I have ones I use for shows, and I have ones I just wear everywhere. And it's a good conversation starter. It's a good way to do that. You should be, you know, you be proud of yourself. You're running amok. Breeding snakes, doing your thing. So definitely, I want Rogue mugs and hats at some point. Just have to figure out where to get them. So
there you go.
Yeah.
I think we'll change gears for a second.
Sweet.
Yeah. We'll get off the, I want to talk about some positive things. Well, you know, there's going to be all
the show's been mostly yelling.
Yelling. I'm getting off the soapbox, and I'm going to show the good things that we do.
Put it away.
Yeah. First, I was going to talk about some cool things as far as Facebook goes and promoting the Facebook pages that people do and whatnot. Then I was going to talk about what's your most exciting project for this upcoming season and what's my... most exciting project for this upcoming season.
I don't want to know. I haven't thought about it yet.
Of course, there's Morelia Python forums.
Yes.
If you want to look at the Morelia world at a glance or just the reptile world at a glance, I think the coolest thing out there is the reptile report.
Yes.
You can go in there. You can look at all the different things that are happening on the world of reptiles, from everything from the different types of reptiles that people keep to reptile laws, shipping, business, anything you name it. And what's cool is that, and this is one thing that I really like about this reptile report, is that they actually direct you back to the actual site. So they don't
right.
just pull it off of the site. They're directing you back to the site, so then you are, you know, maybe hopefully you become involved in the site.
Right.
At that
or
point.
You can at least look up the stuff and talk to some people. I like their Photoshop pick of the week that, you know, clearly it's a Photoshop snake and they're just showing it to you.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's just cool things that are on there. So definitely go over and check that out. Now, if you go onto Facebook, I'm not being biased or anything, but I think that
do it.
Group on there is the Morelia Pick of the Week. I'm just saying. I don't know. Because it encompasses everything. You
it
got
does.
Carpets. You got scrubs. You got bones. You got green trees. You got the whole group, you know. Definitely a
yep.
cool thing. There's a lot of cool people in there. And every morning you get to wake up. At least this is my morning. The first thing I do is I look at my Facebook Morelia Pick of the Week page, and I see who's posted what overnight. Another one is the Scrub Pythons page that David Means put up. If
yeah.
you're into Scrub Pythons, you should definitely go over and check that out, because basically it's a Scrub Forum Love Fest, and you can just go there and look at all the different cool Scrub Pythons that people got all around the place. There's another one that's the Bolens Pythons. If Bolens Pythons are your thing, that's one that Ari Flagel put up. He's the moderator, I guess you would say, over there. Definitely a cool thing if you're in the Bolens Pythons. There's the Chondro Room, just basically
right.
all chondros. I look at that every morning. Basically, my jaw hits the ground looking at these crazy chondros.
There was one white and black thing I saw online this week, and I the picture was so crappy I couldn't figure out if it was a green like a chondro or if it was a calico retic, but it was sitting like a chondro, and I'm like, God, I hope so. That's awesome looking. But I digress. I apologize. Go ahead.
Then there is the other one that I think is really cool. I'm sorry.
What
Peter
happened?
Said, I'm not going to say it. I'll tell you later.
Do it. No, you do it now. What the hell happened?
Some people like looking at porn in the morning. I don't know. Just saying. Anyway. and then there is the Australian Reptile Mutation group, where they
right.
put all the different types of reptile mutations in there, and that's a pretty cool little group.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, there's that. The other thing that I like is all the different radio podcasts, you know, that are out there. I mean, there's kind of a niche for each type of thing. There's Herpentime. Those guys, I think the one guy, he's always out there. He's herping in Pennsylvania somewhere, and I always want to know where he's herping so I can go check it out. But,
right.
you know, he's out there herping, and the other guy, you know, he's over there talking they kind of talk about the whole reptile market, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm.
They pretty much hit
mm-hmm.
on everything. There's Urban Jungles Radio. Those guys are big time passionate about conservation and education, you know, and they have they do it in a humorous type of way.
Right.
I really dig those guys. They're, you know, he's really they're really big into being against the rattlesnake roundup, which is awesome. you know?
Yeah.
I think that's something that we don't focus enough on, is educating people on how bad that stuff is, and you know, that you definitely should be against that kind of stuff. There is of course there's Snake Bites TV. That's probably one of my other favorite things. Tomorrow morning I wake up sometime in the afternoon and I'll be watching Snake Bites TV. I think that's really cool. I love Brian. He's super passionate. He gets me pumped up every time that I watch him. He's, you know, that's an awesome, awesome thing. And I'm probably forgetting people, and I don't mean to forget people. I just think that there's so many cool things out there. Alabama Herp Radio is another one that's a pretty cool show. Pornhub.com, if that's your
thing. What? What'd you say?
Pornhub.com, if you want to look at that.
Yeah, well, if we're going to talk about Facebook pages, I think a great one is Rogue Reptiles. You can go check out there whenever I decide to put pictures. Oh, never mind. It's not that good. Moving forward.
But, yeah, you should definitely check out these different – and they're all Blog Talk Radio shows. And, of course, I would be messed up if I didn't say the best one, the one that started it all, at least for me, is Reptile Radio. You know, Larry Suttles is the guy that pretty much started the whole Blog Talk Reptile Radio type of thing, and, you know, all these other guys have sort of bounced off of his idea. You know, they're back to once a week. It's CK. He fills in for Larry. I don't think Larry really does it anymore. But he was on there a couple times. But still cool show. Again, they're over there on the Bush League Breeders. You know, I post over there all the time. They had Mike Curtin on there a couple weeks ago.
Awesome.
Which was really cool. Yeah, he talked about some of his projects and the Ocelot project and his Russian Tiger line, and you know, it was really cool. But if I forgot anybody, I'm sorry. I just want people to be checking out different things in the reptile world. I did forget one. Chris Behoff from CB Reptiles. His carpet python classified page. So if you want to sell your carpet python, go over there and check it out. You know, you can ask them to make you a member and like his page. And definitely, if you have a carpet python to sell, there you go. That's the place to probably just to sell it. So
you'll reach a lot of carpet python people, and that's your target audience. So yeah.
All right, so I guess 2013 breeding season. I know I'm probably jumping the gun with this, but fast approaching to me.
It is.
Because I work, so I'm already like a month ahead. So to me, I'm already back to school mode. It's fall. That's when you start to cool your stuff down and ready to go, so...
Mm-hmm.
Go first. Go ahead. What's your most exciting pairing, 2013?
It would have. See, I've got so many that it's like I'm excited about a few of them. I'm excited for my first crack at Granite IJs. I mean, I just want to do that. I'm excited for. I'm probably going to be breeding my Tiger Jag with my Caramel male, so I'll get Caramel Tiger Jags.
Okay.
And then I'm also going to be breeding my caramels together to make super caramels. So those would be up there. And then, you know, I also have things like the waters and the maybe a white lip project. There's a few things that I'm like, okay, this would be nice. And then, of course, I have my red tiger project that I've been trying for the past 3 years. And then I got the one I'm sending to you, so it'd be other stuff, so that'll be fun too. So
I think that's your top. I guess we're gonna go with top five then. Sounded like five.
I went a little high. Yeah, go
cool,
ahead.
Because I don't know if I could narrow it down to three, which is cool. I'm glad that you made it five.
It's annoying.
Obviously, probably This is tough. Well, Citrus Tigers, Super Citrus
Thank
Tigers.
Thank you. I was hoping you'd put them in that list.
They're at the top of my list.
Yeah. I'll
definitely
grab one of those.
I'll buy no zebras.
No, Jesus. It's not fair.
Look forward to that. Sun Glows.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, Sun Glows.
You're ready for that this year?
Yep. Albino male, caramel head, albino female.
If those have to hatch over here in this incubator, you're not getting them back. I'm telling you right now. You best make sure that incubator is working.
Granite.
Letting you know.
Granite zebras.
Awesome.
Super caramel, super zebras.
Super caramel, super zebras. So the logistics, I'm expecting an all glowing wonderfulness.
Yeah.
No pattern.
Is that five? One, two, three.
That's five.
Four, five. And I guess my runner-up would be Zebra Caramel Jags.
Zebra Caramel Jags.
Yeah.
Getting confusing. But,
three
that's awesome. Yeah.
Three combo more, so that would be, well, I got one more runner up.
Oh, no.
would be double heifer snows.
Double heifer snows.
Yeah, double heifer snows.
So you're getting sun glows and you can get double heads for snows. When are you producing a Xanax, and can I have an Xanax jag?
The Xanax? I was going to make.
And a visual female.
Visual female.
Visual female and Xanax Jag. Give me
there
both.
2014. Stay tuned.
No, damn it, now.
hopefully by then you'll have some of those crazy pythons that I want, like, you know, a pair of Magpie.
Like the Lyasis? Yeah, I'm pumping them up. Well, I'll have waters this year because I have adult waters, so they should go.
Okay.
Olives, you got to give me some time. Max, you might have to give me some time.
Okay.
I don't want to tell you what I'm hunting already.
Oh,
geez. Because it's... it may be one of those, like, the Bismarcks where I just got to come out of nowhere with it. And,
oh,
geez. But that will be an adult thing that I could be producing next year, too. So.
Ah, cool.
Yep.
Cool. I kind of like these shows where we just kind of shoot the shit. I should have gave people the call-in number. I do a bad job with that. I always forget that. You know, that way if people want to call.
This is why we don't have callers.
But I want to promote the Carpet Fest before we are not live anymore. 2013. I think the date we've decided on was May 18th.
May 18th, okay. I got to go request off now.
May 18th, yep.
Cool.
I think this year is going to be a lot smoother than
yep.
it was last year. I think that hopefully we get a lot more people. I got flyers getting ready to get made up. And, of course, it's going to be at Howard Redding's house again, where the first one was. He's from Redding Reptile Breeders. I know he said he was going to be in Virginia. I can't remember the date.
I heard he was going to be in Daytona.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. I saw the post that you guys, before we came on the show, that said that you were going to be doing autographs at the reptile convention.
You know, he actually had me sign a book.
Did he really?
At White Plains Day. He's like, here, sign this. I signed it, and he's like, I'm going to post it up and be like, oh, my God, I actually met him. So, but he hasn't done it yet, so it was kind of like, you know, it was going to be funny, but he got distracted by other stuff. But but no, he's like, here, sign this. I'm like, oh, God, all right.
Okay, so it's going to be the 28th at Richmond, July 28th, and actually Mo's going to be there too. So Howard and Mo are going to be at Richmond, Virginia show, July 28th. I guess it's Richmond, Virginia Reptile.
Really? Okay, because yep. I'll be at the Reading Reptile Show on the 28th as well, but that's in a different state.
So,
they'll be in Virginia. I'll be in Pennsylvania, so it'll be cool.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, definitely go and check them out. And I know Howard is also going to be at Hamburg. And that
yep.
is, what date's that, Owen?
August 4th?
August 4th.
I think.
Oh, by the way, that's the Richmond Reptile Expo in Virginia. And then Hamburg is August 4th. So they'll be, it's August 4th or August 6th. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, and Mo will be there. So there you go. So go go over there and definitely check that out. Mojo Reptiles and, of course, Howard Redding Reptiles. They'll be at those shows. August 4th it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mo's like our – she's like our reporter on the
producer.
Street.
Yeah.
Keeps me going.
She's a producer. She's
like
the guy that's telling us what to say. That we're not sounding too stupid.
Right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd sound like a freaking idiot.
Like, when the hell is it? And Mo's like, here. We're like, oh, thanks, Mo. So it's much easier this way. Adding every show.
You know, I thought my co-host would text me with that, but, whatever.
Hey, I'm looking at pictures of reptiles right now. I don't have time to save your butt.
Okay.
One of those things.
I got you.
But, you know how, Mo brought her, she brought Riddler and I think another one to Carpet Fest last year just to kind of show them off a little bit.
Yep.
Definitely thinking about bringing, you've seen my big girl, Sophie. I was thinking about bringing her to Howard's just to let her cruise and, you know, kind of have the let the big 10-foot coastal go and be outside for a little bit. See how she does.
Yeah, I would do that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I will. Yeah,
people
but
like that.
Get some more people to come out because then you start bringing people can bring animals to showcase a little bit, and then of course we also have the auction. And I swear to God, I'm bringing a gavel. So.
And we definitely will be live from this show. I promise we'll have.
All right, I forgot the computer.
Yeah.
Are we gonna
keep
doing this?
Yeah.
We're gonna keep bringing this up every time.
Yeah, and we will definitely be broadcasting live from there, and I'm sorry, I'm getting stuff with people texting me again, but definitely. Check that out. Carpet Fest. You can go to www.carpetfest.com. You can check out the 2012 Northeast Carpet Fest page on Facebook. Go over and become a member. I'll put updates on both sites so people can be updated. You can go see what happened last year at the Carpet Fest. I kind of like that. It was just a few people because there was a nice group, but just it was an intimate group. You got to talk to different people and really get a feel for people outside of the forums and, you know, talk to people, even stuff other than snakes, you know.
Right.
I definitely am going to get a place to stay this time. I'm thinking that too. Yep. So I don't have to worry about driving or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's going to be a good time. So if you're interested in participating in anything, please get in contact with myself or with Howard and definitely become a member of there for updates. And we'll definitely be updating on the show. We're going to be handing out pamphlets for, you know, some of the breeders and such to be handing out at shows when they're selling carpets. Because, I mean, if you're into carpet pythons, you pretty much – and you're in the area and you're able to go, you're pretty much a dope if you don't go. Because you're going to get to rub shoulders with some of the best breeders of carpet pythons around. Get to talk to them one-on-one and actually get to meet them. And, it's just a good time. And what I really liked is because it's in Maryland, Condro people come out too, you know.
Mm-hmm. And also the auction opens you up to a fantastic opportunity to get a morph that you might be jonesing for or a carpet that you need for a project at a extremely good price, and it's all for charity. So it's one of those things that you have to just participate. And I mean, I know I'm coming with a couple bucks in my pocket because I kind of zilched for myself out of the last year. I'm like, I don't really need to. Holy crap, that's up on the auction? God damn it. So it's one of those things where, you know, it's definitely good.
Absolutely.
Have to do it.
So, yeah, definitely, like I said, go over to our Facebook page, Morelia Python Radio. Like us over there. Follow us there, and you'll see the Morelia Pick of the Week. Go over and check that out. The 2012 Northeast, well, obviously now it's going to be 2013, but that's the page name, Northeast Carpet Fest. Go over there and check that out. Check out MoreliaPythonRadio.com. See what's going on there. I have to do a better job at updating that in a more efficient manner. And like I said, the show's a lot of work to do, and you know, getting guests and, you know, mapping out the show, and but I love it, and you know, I hope it continues for a long time because I really like hearing all the different. I've learned a lot from just doing the show. You know, it's great to rub shoulders with the breeders and actually get to talk to them, and you know, not just reading posts online, to actually get to hear you know, different things. So you know, cool. You can check us out on iTunes. Like right now, we are recording, so you can hear us back when you listen back on iTunes. Go over and follow us on the Blog Talk page. So it would be Blog Talk Radio / Morelia Python Radio. You can get to it from our website, or you can follow it from the Facebook page. That way, you know, if we ever do surprise shows or anything like that, you'll be able to know when they're going to be. So that's cool. You can follow us on Twitter, Morelia Python Radio, at twitter.com. And I think that's all I have as far as Morelia Python Radio goes. As for me, you can check out EB Morelia. I'm probably going to be putting up some animals soon. You know, go over there, ebmorelia.com, and check it out. And you can like our Facebook page. And that's all I got. What do you got?
Hey, for me, you can definitely go on Facebook and Rogue Reptiles on Facebook. Come on over, like us. You'll also be able to see all the pictures that we're posting up and all the news going on at Rogue. Babies hatching, new pairs coming in, different things going on. Also, you can go to rogue-reptiles.com. You can see our snakes for sale, as well as bios on all our breeders, breeding journal for what we're going to be doing in the next coming year and the season, so you can keep track of what pairs you might want to see and whether we get eggs or babies from that. That's all
cool.
I got. Nick?
All right. Don't forget, next week we have Damien, Reptile Connects. He's going to come at us live from Sydney, Australia, I think he's from.
Okay.
We're going to be talking Antree. What's
that? That'll be an earlier show, right?
No. No, because when it's our time, it is 11 o'clock in the afternoon their time.
Holy crap. Never mind.
Yeah. So they're a day ahead. Day ahead of us, which is kind of neat. But if you have any questions, if you have any guests you'd like to hear, I'm going to be doing the next round of guests. You can email me at info@moreliapythonradio.com and get your question in. So next week is going to be, he not only does he have an awesome collection of Morelia, but he has an awesome collection of Antaresia. And you got Nick Button's book about to come out, which is That's Nick Mutton and Justin Julander. Both have been guests of the show. Yeah.
Yep.
So that should be cool. I know you have some of that stuff, so put some questions together, Owen, of what you want to talk Antaresia wise. And that's all I got.
All right. That's I guess that's it for this episode. And I guess I would say that just everyone should check in with us next week. And everybody have a safe and happy rest of the week. And we'll catch you all next time.